If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m., and it's Thursday at 11 a.m., well, 11:06. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. So I appreciate you tuning in today. A lot of information to go over today. We're going to try to make it interesting. We've got, you know, the Leon County Commission met on Tuesday, and, you know, I'm going to brag just a minute here. You know, I've sort of, when you're in the news business, you watch what other news outlets are doing. And, you know, we have published, I think, four or five stories for the Leon County Commission meeting, leading up to the meeting and after it, updated some of the stories. For example, the one on the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League resolution. And then we also have a briefs from the meeting, from Washington meeting, with 12 items in there that they dealt with, which we're going to go over today in the second segment. But the coverage, you just can't get better coverage than what we're doing on these local meetings. So I hope, again, I know I'm patting myself on the back here a little bit, and also the people that are that help do that, of the Talas Reports and Above the Fold. So anyway, we're going to dig into some things that you're not going to get anywhere else here in the next segment on the Leon County Commission meeting. Now, is it earth-shattering? Is it going to change your life forever? No, but it will keep you informed and give you an idea of where things are going. Like today, we're going to introduce you to a new word that I've never heard that was addressed at the Leon County Commission meeting. And so we'll get that, and then you can settle in. I think the softball game... The softball game is on at 3 today, I think. Is that right, Bobby?
Let me get that for you. I believe so, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I have been following this at a distance because I'm not a softball fan, but I've been following the score and, you know, hey, this is like game 7 of the World Series here. So they're playing a 2 out of 3 set. They won the first game pretty easily. The second game, they had a lead, ended up losing. So now this is the rubber match, and it's
today at 3. 3 p.m. Oklahoma.
Yeah, have you been following it all or no?
I've been seeing the clips on Twitter that they post. I follow their Twitter page. It looks like they've been killing it, yo. Like, I don't have time to, like, sit down and watch, like, 9 innings of games. So I just go to YouTube, you know, after the games are over, and I watch, like, the highlights and stuff.
Right. I think it's only 7 innings, Bobby. But anyway. Oh. Which is another benefit. So listen, one of the things that I've heard is the, you know, people sort of fade away when you start talking about girls softball, but evidently this has sort of put attention on girls softball.
Yeah.
It's a much faster game than it used to be.
I was just about to say, like, it looks like when I was growing up, it was a little slower, you know what I'm saying? But like now, like just for like I said, I'm 22. I'm watching it and I'm like, yo, this is like actually like intense. Like this is pretty, like they're getting it out there now.
Yeah. And so anyway, that game will be on 3 o'clock. We wish them luck. Listen, found out that Benton Road is going to be closed for 10 months. Now, the city has obviously been planning for this. Somehow I didn't know about it. I saw a press release. We posted a story on Talas Reports, and thousands of people went to read the story. It's going to be closed between Centerville and Thomasville Road. And if you lived in Tallahassee for any length of time, that is probably the most popular cut through of any street. And so we'll get into some details. I gave a little bit of details on that, but I was a little shocked to find that it's gonna be closed for 10 months, and that's in June, starting in June. So everybody's got to prepare for that. Give you a little update on that in the bottom of the hour, and we'll go over the city commission meeting agenda for next week briefly. And we'll also talk about the Northeast Gateway. There's a business group a couple of business groups have scheduled a Zoom webinar for noon today. So you can listen to my show and go register for that. If you go onto our website, you can see exactly how to register for that. But they're going to be providing some information on the gateway ahead of the June 15 meeting. And we'll get into sort of the issues there again. We've talked about it a number of times, but I want to keep everybody up to date. There's going to be a crucial vote on June 15th. We'll tell you what the vote is. About and what these business groups are trying to do with their meeting at noon. And again, that's on a really big project, the Northeast Gateway. We'll reset that and talk about it a little bit. Ironically, that is sort of it is in the side of town where this new fulfillment center is going to be if everything goes forward with that. So that whole area is just really looking and going to be changing a lot over the next 5, 10, 15 years. And then in the last segment, I want to talk a little bit about the governor's race that's starting to develop. Just for fun, I mean, Charlie Crist, Nikki Fried, Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, you know, there's a lot of news outlets that are getting to the race early. I thought it'd be fun to look at exactly what they're in the news for this week. And it's pretty interesting to look at the different tactics and, you know, what's going on. So anyway, we'll run through that. We'll look at, you know, what Governor DeSantis has been talking about, what Nikki Fried has been talking about. And then, you know, Charlie Crist was just in town here on his voting tour, and we'll look at what he's trying to do with that. So that'll be in the last segment. But I also wanted to give you the latest on, you know, the COVID reports are sort of no more in terms of how they have originally been done. They're weekly reports, and they're going to be updated tomorrow. So we'll have some information for you on next Tuesday. But do want to give you sort of a little bit of a snapshot on the vaccination story. So 38% of the people living in Leon County as of June 8th have been vaccinated, according to CDC. Florida's reported about 2.3 million total cases of the coronavirus. That's the old information. But the five counties with the highest percentage of their population fully vaccinated, that would be with both shots. Sumter County, 71%. St. John's County, 53%. Sarasota County, 53%. Charlotte County, 51%. And Collier County, 50%. So, obviously, Leon County is lagging behind the leading counties. Let's see, about 36% of people living in Gadsden County and 33% in Franklin County are vaccinated. And then overall in Florida, 53% of people have received at least one dose, and 42% have got both are fully vaccinated. So when you compare, Leon is 38 fully vaccinated and Florida is 42. You know, looking at that information, I would probably tend to argue that Leon's population age is much younger than Florida overall. That's just a guess because of the university. And so, I mean, I'm not sure if that explains the difference there. But anyway, I'm not sure, you know, I guess obviously vaccinations are still available, and they'll be pushing that for the remainder of the year. And, you know, this is, again, we see these, the way they change reporting the COVID numbers from a weekly standpoint. Like I said, we'll get that data tomorrow and then have it back out to you Tuesday. And then, you know, the other thing on the COVID numbers, going back to the policy stuff, you know, so we've got summer coming up, and there are still some COVID protocols that are in place here. I don't know that we've heard. We've got a school board meeting coming up on Tuesday, and so I think they're supposed to release sort of their plan for the summer, you know, with summer classes, or if there's a Leon County-sponsored events, what the protocol is going to be. And then in addition to that, you know, I'm not sure that we've seen anything from the city on the and I got to look into that, on the community centers and how they're going to be dealing with the summer programs that they normally have. So anyway, all right, well, listen, welcome to Above the Fold. When we get back, we're going to run through the Leon County Commission meeting using our story on the what we call the Leon County Commission briefs, and some interesting items in there. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. It is Thursday. You're listening to Real Talk 93.3. And we've got, like I said, we're going to spend some time on the Leon County Commission meeting and continue to pat myself on the back here with the stories that we're covering. So we had five stories on the Leon County Commission meeting that involved the Children's Services Council, changes to Meridian Road due to a tragic crash. We had a story that we also updated after the meeting on the Anti-Defamation League resolution. A story on the TLH Arts, which we're going to get in detail a little bit more. And we also had a story that on a presentation by Walt McNeil, Sheriff Walt McNeil, at the meeting, and which got quite a bit of traffic. And so, very good coverage of the meeting. And you know, we'll start with the Walt McNeil presentation, which was not scripted. We didn't have a story ready for that, but he talked about gave him an update on the crime numbers. And look, I'm just telling you what he said. I know there's been some debate over these numbers, and we'll sort of dig into those hopefully in the next week or so. But he addressed a number of law enforcement issues at the Leon County Commission meeting on Tuesday. He told elected leaders that from January 2021 to May 2021, that violent crime is down 33%, and the rape was down 33%, and robberies were about the same when compared to January 2020 to May 2020. Now, you know, we have a full story up on his presentation. One of the things that he did say in that presentation was that, which got the attention to the attention of the elected officials, was that 40 to 50% of the people that are arrested seem to have mental health issues. And so, you know, again, something else to try to address from a local government perspective. Anyway, the next thing is Commissioner Rick Miner recognized Jim Stevenson and Tara Tanaki for their efforts and commitment to conserving 42 acres of sanctuary swamp. Now, this is recently received a Land Stewards of the Year Award from Florida Wildlife Federation. And what happens at these meetings is a lot of people get recognized for things like this. The Knight Creative Institute was recognized for their Art of the Box community project. I know if you're driving around town, you've seen these electric boxes that have paintings on them. The idea there is to try to do that instead of letting people put graffiti up there. So they should have about 28 of those boxes painted by the end of the year. Claudia Blackburn, who is the public health person with the Leon County Department of Health, gave an update, COVID update. The positivity rate was around 5%. There was only 10 COVID-related deaths in the month of May, whereas in January there was 76. And says, of those who are eligible to be vaccinated against COVID, 47% of that population have been inoculated. So good news there. Brian Welch acknowledged the efforts of the county related to the Meridian Road item, which we talked about, where two Childs High School students were tragically killed. Something that he had brought the issue up. They looked into it, and you know, they did this analysis which showed there was a section of road that had a number of accidents. So they're going to try to. It's not like you can do on the road itself. That is a road is a dangerous road. You must travel with caution. The signs and some of the other preventive measures they're going to take is more for those people who understand it's a dangerous road and maybe sometime forget. If you're on that road driving fast with no regard for your life or someone else's, there's not a lot that these changes are going to help with. The other thing was they were going to deal with a section of Proctor Road out north of town, which is a dirt road. They're going to stage some equipment there so when it rains that they can deal with that issue. That road is just way too expensive to pave at this point. Vice Chair Bill Proctor got into the meeting in his usual way, denoting his dissatisfaction with something at the state level. And this has to do with the riot bill, House Bill 1. Actually, the technical name is Combating Public Disorder. Commissioner Proctor felt the need to comment on this and said that it was disruptive to the First Amendment. Proctor stated, this legislative session, we've seen democracy on the whole is on death row, and it's too bad. The Florida legislature has made it more complicated to vote in our state. And he also said that the state is looking to whitenizing of democracy as people of color are frustrated and suppressed for the right to vote. Now, before you get off, into the vein of saying that Bill Proctor is nuts by talking about this and is just, you know, exaggerating and he's, you know, shouldn't be in office. You know, later on at the end of the show in our last segment, we're going to talk about how Charlie Crist is basically taking this same tack regards to the voting rights. Now, he's not using the word whitenizing, but he's basically taking the same tack and trying to convince people that Republicans are suppressing the vote. And, you know, that's going to be one of the major issues, and it's going to be, we'll talk more about it in the last segment, but Commissioner Bill Proctor, Vice Chair, speaking on that issue. County Commissioner Nick Maddox made the point, they were talking about lobbying contracts. Now, this goes back to, again, this whole idea of social equity on a lot of different issues. And this had to do with the amount of money that is spent on lobbying contracts with the county. It says, in a discussion regarding renewing contracts for the state lobbying firms used by the county, Commissioner Nick Maddox contended there should be an increase in funds from $70,000 to $85,000. With that increase, he is arguing that $25,000 should be used for minority lobbying firms in accordance with the Minority and Women-Owned Business Enterprise Program, improving their chances to compete at a primary level. Now, I saw a little bit of this discussion, and his argument is that the lobbying corps at the state capitol is not reflective of some of the demographics that he would like to see. And so this is a move to try to, I think, encourage or to provide opportunities for someone who is a minority African-American in lobbying to get into the business. And so look for, you know, they have a lobbying group that they have hired for the last couple of years. So what I would look for the lobbying money to be increased to this group, and then they're going to be hiring a subcontractor, which will be a minority, to help out with that county contract. That would be my prediction. As we talked about, we did a story on the Children's Services Council wanting a loan for $400,000 to get their process going. They unanimously approved that, and so that will be they'll have the money to spend on operational expenses. Now, the county commission discussed the issue with the minimum wage for county commission or county Leon County employees. We had a article about this with regards to the city commission. They are at $12 an hour, and in the next fiscal year, 2021-2022, they're wanting to get to $13 over at the city. The county is trying to get to $14 next year. Vice Chair Proctor stated that he, quote, wanted to see $15 an hour, and he hopes the commission will be more aggressive next year with a higher increase. So again, you're seeing both the city and the county moving towards this $15 an hour wage. You know, is this going to help get people back into labor force? You know, we saw the issue with the lifeguards in the city of Tallahassee. They were having to close some schools because they didn't have enough, or not some pools, because they didn't have enough lifeguards. Now, I know that pay has really increased. They were making $8 or $9 an hour a couple of years ago. Now, I know that is up to, well, the minimum's got to be 12 now. So, anyway, the county commission voted. It looks like their minimum wage will be $14. Now, on the Anti-Defamation League resolution, which we wrote an article about, there were many speakers that offered their views on that. Some were in favor, others were against it. And, you know, a couple of speakers mentioned the fact that the resolution should not be approved because it was not more inclusive, and the fact that it excluded language specifically denoting anti-Christian hate. Now, the problem is that the resolution was about, you know, getting rid of hate and extremism, which I think everybody can support. But within the resolution, they actually pulled out specific groups. Christian churches weren't one of them. I guess to her credit, Leon County Commissioner Kristen Dozier commented on the concern, and she feels that the resolution covers all religious hate. So they moved on with that. And there was also a $1.8 million grant approved for TLH Arts to build a performance and rehearsal space over on off of Gaines Street. This will be, we've got a story up on this, and you can see sort of some artist renditions. A 300-seat performance center, which could, you know, small concerts, comedy shows, can host all kind of different things. So we'll see what happens with that. All right, that's a rundown of the Leon County Commission meeting. So when we get back, we'll turn to the city and the Northeast Gateway. Stay tuned.
This is a story about Billy Joe and Bobby Sue. Two young lovers with nothing better to do than sit around the house, get high and watch them too. And here's what happened when they decided to cut loose. Headed down to El Paso.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. As I said, we're going to pivot a little bit to the city commission meeting next week. Just give you a couple items here before we dig into the details next week. And we'll talk about the Northeast Gateway and also Benton Road, which if you live in that area, you should be prepared. 10 months without Benton Road, and we'll give you the details on that. The city commission agenda came out in a quick perusal, just a couple of things to look at here. You know, I'm always looking at trying to understand the affordable housing issue. And so it is really a lot of different parts that go together that fall under this affordable housing moniker. And so there's an issue that's coming up here, the city sponsorship of 3 Habitat for Humanity homes. And so obviously creating affordable housing through this program. And so, you know, the Habitat for Humanity homes. So the city is putting up $195,000 to help build these 3 homes. And so I guess this again is, and you know, I again don't understand the complete, are these people going to own these homes outright? Are they just going to own are they just renting? Because I know there's some programs on affordable housing where they don't own the land, they just own the house. And it's never easy to understand. Even this item here is very detailed, just from donating $195,000 for these 3 homes. And they're going to basically, they're going to enter into an agreement with Habitat to sponsor the construction of the 3 affordable homes. This is going to be next year. They donate up to 3 city-owned lots for the purpose of developing the units. They provide $65,000 per home, which is the $195,000 to Habitat from the Affordable Housing Trust, which has about $1.6 million in it. And they commit to provide a minimum of 600 volunteer hours to support the construction of the 3 homes. So anyway, that's the process. It'll be interesting to see how this works out. And then again, just another part of this affordable housing solution that everybody talks about being a major problem in this community. So that was one thing that we'll be looking at as we get closer to the meeting. The other thing is, a couple of public hearings. One is on the neighborhood compatibility ordinance, which we talked about previously. And so, you know, we'll probably redo our story on that or re-up it with some comments from the elected officials, if there are any. And also, you know, this is something, there's another public hearing on the volunteer annexation of a couple parcels of land. And I know that sounds like really in the weeds, but you know, if you're driving up Thomasville Road, if you look on the right and the left side, you're starting to see these little cutout lots that are being developed. That's because of the demand for housing. And what's happening is these lots, because of the way the city was developed or annexed, or, you know, how the north was added to the city limits, north of I-10, through different annexations, a lot of these little lots are not city property they're not in the city limits. And so to get to the urban services that you can get as being part of the city, most builders want them annexed in. And so that's what we're starting to see a lot of, especially up Thomasville Road, when you start seeing these cut-in roads and these new developments going in. So anyway, that'll be addressed at the next city commission meeting also. Now, let's pivot to, let's go to the Northeast Gateway issue real quick. We have a story up, a couple of business groups, including the Greater Chamber of Commerce and the Capital City Chamber of Commerce, are having a meeting at noon today, just in 20 minutes, to provide some more information on the Northeast Gateway. Now, these groups are supporting the gateway, and you know, their concern is that, why they're having this meeting is that the meeting notice states that there has, quote, been a considerable amount of misinformation regarding the proposed Northeast Gateway Wilanie Boulevard Blueprint Project. So now, they're going to have this Zoom webinar today at noon, which you can go register. And if you go to Talos Reports, you can see the link where you can go register. And the information that's going to be provided will come from the officials that are working on the project. And the meeting is taking place ahead of the June 15th Blueprint meeting, which was specifically scheduled to address this project. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that this is happening because the previous meeting, you know, a 6-5 vote basically said, look, we need to put this project on hold after, you know, the last two or three years where they've been putting in all these agreements. And so they had a vote to go ahead and get another couple weeks of information or try to address some concerns from some people. And now, as I have said before, there's two groups of people that are sort of raising question about this. They're the group that I would call them the progressives, who really don't think the road needs to be built at all. They want to focus more on, you know, development closer to the city core. They want to focus on public transportation as an answer to some of the traffic issues. So that's one group. And then there's another group that I think voted just to placate or to give people who are concerned, some homeowners, property owners out in that area, a couple more weeks to get some answers. And those people, the people that voted to get more time, were Jeremy Matlow, Jack Porter, and Curtis Richardson on the city, and on the county, Christian Dozer, Rick Miner, and Bill Proctor. Now, I would expect that Curtis Richardson and Christian Dozer and Rick Miner will go back and vote the way they did previously after the staff has had a chance to get more information out to these homeowners. It's a massive project for a couple different reasons. It's not only a road helping out with traffic issues, it's also a road that's going to be around land that will be developed over the next 5 to 15 years. And just to give you some concrete examples why, you know, I support the project. Obviously, there can be some changes to it to make it better if that's what they find out. But just to give you a couple of concrete examples. So the road is going to provide another access point for Montford and Roberts schools in that area, which is needed very badly in that area because of traffic. So that's one reason. Another reason, look, we're doing a road that is going to really release some stress on a canopy road, Centerville Road, which is what we want to do. We want to keep the canopy road the way it is, but we want to try to alleviate some of the traffic issues that deal with it. So, I mean, those are two concrete examples. Now, part of the agreement here is with Klarna State's Homeowner Association is to also connect Shamrock Road to the Willani Boulevard, but only if the road is extended up to Roberts Road, which is what the final agreement was with the Klarna State's Homeowners Association. So anyway, that's a big issue. So we'll see. We'll have some more on that ahead of the June 15th meeting, which again is just solely dedicated to this issue and will be an interesting vote because it will really determine a lot. I mean, if this is a no, I mean, it's going to really have a big impact on a lot of the things that have been planned, including the Northeast Park. I forgot to mention that. That will definitely be at risk if this road is not built, from what I understand. All right. So moving on to another road project. This is something that we posted a story on Taos Reports just yesterday. And like I said, a couple thousand people have read the story. I got blindsided a little bit, didn't know about this, but the title of the story is Benton Road to Close June 14th for 10 months. This is the famous cut-through road between Centerville Road right there at the hospital over to Thomasville Road. And so they're doing some major road construction there, and it's going to be closed for 10 months. There's four phases of the project, and it's going to last from 9 to 12 months. The city is, got to deal with trees. It's got to deal with pedestrian issues. Obviously, it's going to be a disruption to the neighborhood and some of the area businesses. If you go to our story, we've got a email and a phone number if you have any questions on what to do during the construction. Now, from what I understand, I talked to the city this morning, and there's been a lot of outreach to the neighbors. I don't think the neighbors are going to be surprised by this, the ones that are right near the road, but it is the city told me that they had been doing a lot of engagement, a lot of mailings, and talking to the people in that area to get them ready for this. But the city, and I believe I've got a link on here to their website, which shows, there's not really any good detours on this because that's why it's a cut through. if it wasn't a cut through, they wouldn't. There'd be some nice detours. So this is definitely going to cause some problems, and I think everybody needs to plan for it. They're going to start working, like I said, four phases. So it's going to start on the Thomasville Benton Road end and move towards Centerville Road. And so It'll be closed to through traffic. Obviously, there'll be some limited access to neighborhood traffic from that road with other detours, I'm sure. So anyway, just be aware of that. And if you want more details, you can go to Taos Reports and get the lowdown on the on that story. All right. So enough of the city commission and road projects. Interesting to see now what we're seeing with these road projects, because the Northeast, and this is in the Northeast part of Tallahassee, I mean, it's growing. And the east side of town out Mahan with a fulfillment center, if that's going to show up. So you're going to see a lot more upgrading with the roads and construction. So anyway, I'm glad we could bring that to you. All right, when we get back, we'll pivot to some state issues and tie up some loose ends. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to our last segment here on Above the Fold, this Thursday edition. I wanted to, as we were talking about a little earlier, wanted to go over the gubernatorial candidates and how they're being covered. I know it's early for 2022, but I think looking at what's going on, everybody's starting to getting into races. You know, Val Demings, U.S. Congresswoman from the Orlando area, will be now running against Marco Rubio for his Senate seat. And, you know, we've got Nikki Fried, who's been running for governor since she got elected to the Agriculture Commission position and was joined by Charlie Crist. And so people are starting to... starting to try to define what the campaign's going to look like. And I really think that if you look at these three candidates, and we're talking now about DeSantis and Fried and Crist, you can sort of see the strategies that are going to be employed. So if we start with Fried, because I think hers is the most easy to understand, is she's going to try to continue to do what she was doing from the very beginning, and that is attack Ron DeSantis. The problem is, you know, she probably thought, I can't imagine that she was going to get just a clear path in the primary and then be able to just continue to attack Ron DeSantis. Now, we haven't seen her change that strategy yet. She today is in the news for going after Ron DeSantis. The headline, Nikki Fried says Jack's Bridge lighting is part of an anti-pride pattern for Ron DeSantis. And so she's continuing with that line of attack. Now, she did try to go after Charlie Crist just a bit, but she failed miserably based on reports from the statewide media. She went after him for the signing the contract for the vendor who delivered the unemployment system with the Department of Economic Opportunity that failed so miserably during the COVID year. Now, she had obviously went after Ron DeSantis for that during the last year, but she tried to go after Charlie Crist, saying that he was responsible for the vendor that signed up for that. But it turns out it wasn't Crist. It was former Governor Rick Scott. And so they were really on, you know, the media got on Fried for obviously messing that up. So she's going to have an issue trying to deal, you know, with some substantive policies, because she's just used to attacking Ron DeSantis. Now she's going to have to pivot to looking at Charlie Crist. And while this is happening now, also in the headline is some issues with a program that she's oversees at the Agricultural Commission down in South Florida that she's had to deal with. So it's going to be interesting to see if she can now juggle these balls that she's put in the air and, you know, not have a problem. It seems to me like she's already off to sort of a rough start. Now, if you pivot to Charlie Crist, who is obviously a world-class campaigner and a politician at heart, you know, the headline in Politico is Crist makes GOP election bill centerpiece of early Florida gubernatorial campaign. And this is the part of the voting tour that he's engaged in here right now to try to get to a couple locations and talk about these the voting laws. Now, I will tell you that, you know, I read some of his answers to questions or what his proposals are, and they're not a lot different than what Republicans have in law. Now, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see if reporters on this tour ask him if he supports ballot harvesting, if he supports drop boxes not being manned, if he supports no ID for absentee voting. I mean, he hasn't addressed any of that. He's just saying, you know, we're going to register people when they sign up for driver's license, and they're going to expand some hours. Well, look, that's just around the edges. We got, they're going to need to get his position on these specific issues. And so that'll be interesting to see if they do that during this early centerpiece of his campaign, which is going to revolve around the voting bill that was passed and signed into law by Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, on the other side of this, if you pivot to this and look at Ron DeSantis, you know, his strategy has been to sort of lash out at the media and look at the conspiracy theories that haven't really proven to be true. And, you know, you look at the Rebecca Jones thing with the COVID numbers. She's very easy to tie to the mainstream media here in Florida. So, you know, he's going that route. Obviously, really taking on the issues that appeal to his base. The transgender sports bill is one that Democrats are going to attack him for, saying that he just did that to appeal to his base because there's no examples of an issue in Florida. He's, you know, taking on big tech. So for Ron DeSantis, it's more of, I think he's looks like he's nationalizing the Florida election. And, you know, most people think, you know, obviously he can win that way, but it sure would be good to see him to start to extenuate or to extend his campaign reach to some, you know, specific policies, and for him to talk about why they should appeal to people that are in the middle or on the left. I mean, I know that they voted for the education bill. They're focused on the transgender sports issue, but school choice is an issue that really resonates with the moderate voters and African-American voters. And hopefully that they will start talking about some of those policy issues. I think that the policy debates will be between him and Charlie Crist. And then I think Nikki Fried is just going to be attacking them both as angry white men, one Republican and one as a Democrat. So we'll see how that unfolds. All right, want to pivot to one more local story here that just came out, and this is kudos to Jeff Berlew at the Tallahassee Democrat. And I haven't read this story yet, but the headline is, it's about the Maddox text messages. The headline is Maddox coordinated with JT Burnett in medical marijuana vote. Now, again, I haven't had a chance to read the story, but I will tell you that that is a powerful headline, and here are the reasons why. If this is referring to a vote that had some impact on TrueLeave getting a license here locally, or on a moratorium vote that took place after TrueLeave had a license, this is really big news. TrueLeave is a major player in the cannabis industry. I think it's valued at close to $1 billion. If it turns out that TrueLeave is based, if it got its start at the Tallahassee City Commission during one of the most corrupt times in the history of the city of Tallahassee, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Because, you know, if you go back and look at this, before the medical marijuana was regulated by the state, it was regulated by local jurisdictions. And the first dispensary was opened here in Tallahassee by TrueLeave. And the city, they had to file and get a permit to open it with the city of Tallahassee. Now, if Scott Maddox was involved with that vote, if there was some money that changed hands, if this is a pay-to-play situation in terms of that is related to TrueLeave, that is going to be huge news. And so I look forward to reading this story and then going back and looking at these votes, because this is something that if you read any coverage of TrueLeave, the reason why they were able to be in the position they're in is because they got an early start. And there was a couple of these moratoriums put in other locations, I believe. I think Clearwater or Tampa was another one. But it will be interesting to see what comes out with these text messages, and we'll keep you posted on that. All right, so that's all we have for today. I will next week, we'll be back on Tuesday. A lot going on. You're going to have a school board meeting a city commission meeting, and then you're going to have that blueprint meeting, which was completely dedicated to the Northeast Gateway. We'll try to have a story up on the Northeast Gateway issue before the meeting. We really want to find out where everybody is on this, the elected officials, in terms of why they're against it or why they delayed the meeting. And so we'll try to get you that information. But until then, have a good weekend and go FSU softball. We'll be back on Tuesday.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the minute